Tyrone to Bloomsburg, Scottsdale to Carlisle, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the inflation rate in August continued at a historic high level, and with the heating season approaching, consumers will feel even more of a financial pinch as energy costs continue to rise. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And being lax on crime turned the tide in one past race for governor of Pennsylvania. Will the issue play a role in this year's statewide races? I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. In an extraordinary move, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives this past week voted to hold Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner in contempt of state for refusing to comply with a subpoena requesting materials related to the city's skyrocketing crime rate. Making the move even more unusual is that the vote was bipartisan, with about half of House Democrats joining Republicans in approving the resolution. A House committee is considering impeachment proceedings against Krasner, whose lax prosecution of lawbreakers is being blamed for the spike in Philadelphia's crime rate. State revenue collections exceeded projections in the month of August, as tax collections exceeded expectation by $63.8 million, or 2.3% higher than anticipated. For the fiscal year, which began on July 1st, revenues into the Commonwealth's budget are $60.4 million above projections. In a rare instance of Pennsylvania's Supreme Court rejecting an appeal by Governor Tom Wolf, the justices rejected a request by the governor to decide whether a package of five proposed constitutional amendments is itself constitutional. Wolf wanted the court to utilize its King's Bench power to hear the case directly without going through lower courts. This means Wolf needs to refile the case in Commonwealth Court to continue his challenge. Barring court action, the five proposed constitutional amendments could go before voters as soon as the primary election next May. Among the proposed amendments are provisions that would require voters to present identification when casting a ballot, and a provision that would declare there is no right to an abortion within the Commonwealth. A lingering impact of the COVID-19 pandemic is that ridership on public transportation has not bounced back to pre-pandemic levels. The Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh quotes the CEO of the Pittsburgh Regional Transit Authority saying ridership will not return to levels seen in March of 2020. In May of this year, average weekday bus ridership was down 46% from 2 years ago, average light rail ridership down 76% from pre-pandemic levels. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Energy costs continue to rise, contributing to record-high inflation rates. Pennsylvania sits atop significant natural gas reserves, and with the appropriate policies, could play a major role in supplying the nation and the world's energy needs. Here with a Capital Watch discussion are David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and Stephen Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the show, your favorite commentators, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being on the program.
Great to be back again, David. Thank you.
And Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
Great to be here, David. Thank you.
So it's been a disconcerting time where we saw the markets that were already down seized up and plunged another 1,000 points in one day. And this is, I think in general, it's safe to say that this is not a good sign of where we are in the economy, and that one of the things that spooked the markets so badly was the report on inflation, that even though we've passed a massively expensive so-called Inflation Reduction Act, that inflation continues to rise. And so, you know, as you know, as the listeners have heard me say before, inflation is a thief that steals from everyone. And we've got to get this under control. And the question becomes, well, what are our leaders prepared to do?
Well, for one thing, when we look at inflation, it's not an unknown phenomenon. It's a phenomenon that has been studied academically for more than a century, and economists understand essentially what it is that causes inflation, and the driver in particular is governments that quote unquote print money and easy credit terms that allow for speculation. On a vast scale, where monetary policy is easy, money is floating around out there, easy to get, more and more of it being printed every day, fiscal responsibility being ignored. And we've seen this happen in country after country after country. Again, for more than a century, it's been studied. Those things, when they happen, they tend to generate high inflation, sometimes even hyperinflation, which fortunately we haven't seen that yet, but we're seeing high inflation. The new rate is 8.3%. It's basically the highest it's been since 1979. And the cause of it is literally the administration in D.C. now enacting bills that say Inflation Reduction Act, when in fact the bills are packed with inflationary policy measures.
Correct.
Which pump more dollars out into the economy that's already oversaturated with easy money.
And, you know, I'm very fearful of a point of no return. You know, America is resilient. We are not infinitely resilient. And, you know, at some point, we're going to hit the wall. And I shudder to think what that is going to look like. I mean, fortunately, I guess for the time being that we are rich enough to be this stupid, but, you chuck away money with both hands, like eventually you're going to run out.
And things can get much worse. I mean, we are facing 8.3% inflation now, but there's numerous historical examples of countries that have triple digit inflation.
Oh yeah.
And I had a colleague back in the day when I was serving in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives who brought me money from Zimbabwe.
Yes.
It was like a $2 million bill.
It's a $100 trillion bill.
And yeah, so. That can happen, and
yes.
It does happen. It's not like it's never happened. It's not like it's rare. It happens when countries are irresponsible. And so when you're in that sort of an environment, like now we're at this 8.3% inflation, hitting consumers very hard, making it difficult for folks to make ends meet, but at least they can wait. If they need to buy groceries, they may know the prices tomorrow are going to be a little bit higher, but they're not going to be triple or four times or 10 times or 100 times what they were yesterday.
Right.
If the rates start creeping up into hyperinflation territory, you literally, the moment you receive money, you have to rush out and spend it because it will be worth just a fraction of its former value in the morning when
Correct.
You wake up.
Correct.
And so then it creates an unsustainable cycle that you essentially can't get out of.
Pennsylvania is – we are one of the nation's top energy producing states. We have energy reserves that are like unparalleled. And the notion that we're hurting because of high energy prices when we have energy that we can't get to market is just – wow, that is a spectacle.
Right. It's not as if there is a shortage of the raw material.
Right.
It's sitting right there.
Correct.
It's accessible to us in Pennsylvania.
Recoverable.
We have the technology.
Hmm?
We have the infrastructure to get that clean, abundant natural gas directly out of the ground and to the consumers and the industries that use it. But there have been policy choices that are restricting it. So it's the sad part of it is this is unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
It's unnecessary inflation driven by an unnecessary short supply of essential fuels that we need to run our economy.
Well, and this gets back to the alarming price of diesel fuel and then what that does to our trucking sector.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the energy that runs the trucking industry. 97% of trucks are run on diesel. So when we saw record high diesel prices back in June. That was filtering throughout the entire economy. Much as you said, energy affects manufacturing. It all the price of energy, including diesel specifically at this point, affects everything that is transported throughout the economy through trucks. So, as we were sitting here thinking about inflation, I know this is just a small piece of it, but I just recently saw the number that in 2021, the cost of moving freight by truck increased by 23%. Mm. I think that was just in 2021. I think prior to that, it was a lot. And since that, it's also been a lot. But more than half of the cost of the increase in goods in 2021 was transportation costs. So that goes to show you that half of inflation in 2021 for goods was in transportation. So that just goes to show you a little piece of how the cost of energy really affects the cost of goods throughout the entire economy.
And to have enough of these important energy inputs like natural gas, like diesel fuel for trucks, we have to have not only production, but we also need to have refining capacity, and that this is one of the real challenges, that our refining capacity is aging in place and that it is almost impossible to build new capacity because you can't get the permits.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Our refining capacity is at an all-time low right now, too. So we're not getting the diesel or the gasoline, produced that we used to, even so long as 20 years ago. So that's increasing the cost of fuel and also decreasing the supply that we're able to get, which also increases the cost, of course.
And we talked on one of our recent programs about the need for regulatory reform, both at the state and federal level, because the regulatory challenges that have now been raised against anyone who wants to invest in a complex industrial building structure or system is so daunting that in many cases they are choosing simply not to build them, or at least not to build them here.
Right.
Yeah.
And that hurts us as Pennsylvanians and as Americans. Yes, there are always risks involved in any sort of industrial endeavor, but we can manage those risks. But if we say no altogether or make it so costly that it's impossible, then we become serfs to those who are willing to do it, which are – you can see it unfolding in Europe right now with a person like Putin in Russia who's wielding their ability and willingness to allow access to their natural resources as a weapon against other countries.
Right.
And in some cases, very effectively.
And it's not just those regulatory burdens that are holding things back, although that increases the cost when the cost is so high. When you have government policy that's also incentivizing, alternatives. So, for instance, when you have the government pushing electric cars and electric trucks and pushing a lot of money out to the states to build electric car and truck infrastructure, someone who might be thinking about building infrastructure for natural gas vehicles or, continued, diesel or gas-powered vehicles is going to sit and think, well, do I want to put all of this money into overcoming these regulatory burdens that I'm now faced with when everything's going to be electric in the future? And that's a cost-benefit analysis that's not working out in our favor right now.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation. And Rebecca, you're exactly right that the kinds of projects we're describing here that are necessary, refineries and pipeline systems and those kinds of things, that the upfront investment is so large that it takes decades to see actual return on investment. And so when these industries are being told, we're going to pull the plug on you in 10 years, 15 years, then there's no interest in making the upfront capital investment, even though that's what we really need right now.
Right. We really should be putting our heads together and coming up with a national solution to all of our problems right now. I'm thinking even just sort of like we did when we were faced with all the problems during World War II. Let's get together as a country and build the infrastructure that we need to fight and win this war. We're at the point, I think, where we need to come together as a country and figure out how do we How do we move forward and succeed economically as a country? And building throughout our infrastructure to support our energy development, I think, is a top issue that should be part of that solution that we need to be working on right now.
We are stuck in the midst of all of this magical thinking about, you talk about electric vehicles, and we don't – even if we wanted to do that, even if that was the smart thing to do, which it's not, it would require – a massive expansion of the electrical grid. It would require many, many, many new transmission lines, which the Greens oppose. Every time you try to deploy a new transmission line, you have so-called environmentalists trying to keep it from happening. And in the same way, the strategic minerals that are necessary to make batteries for electric vehicles, to make solar panels and the components of wind turbines, not only do we not mine enough of that stuff here in the U.S., which we don't, but we have zero refining capacity. And I don't think you could even get a permit to build one of those refineries or processing facilities because it's very toxic.
And now those, as you mentioned, David, the green interests, the radical environmentalists who have taken a larger and larger role in dictating the policies of especially the Biden administration, they're gleefully watching the dismantling of our entire industrial and energy infrastructure and knowing that it can't be replaced because of the regulatory overreach, and they think that's a good thing. They're,
right.
they're celebrating that.
Right. They're trying to de-civilize us.
And
they're trying to primitivize us.
Magical thinking, you can call it that, but it's worse than that. It's dangerous thinking because it will cost lives. It will cost livelihoods in a rapid way. When you can't get electric power, you have – whether it's hot weather, cold weather – or any other type of weather involved, people start to suffer and in fact will get sick and die from that if they can't heat their homes or cool their homes.
Food spoilage. People can't preserve their medications.
You have – think about drugs and the medicinal materials that are needed to help people with diabetes or other conditions that are terrible but treatable. If they can't get access through the industrial processes that are necessary to create those products – Their health will suffer, or they too may die, and it's tragic because the story that these militant environmentalists are telling, they're talking about wanting to save the earth when in fact they're sacrificing the future of humanity on the earth.
Correct, and it's only — and Rebecca, this is a point that you've made many times on this program — that only advanced societies with advanced economies are able to afford the kinds of environmental protections and higher standards of living that we have in America and other advanced countries.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The better our economy does, the better we'll be able to afford to take care of our natural resources.
They won't take yes for an answer. I mean, in the course certainly of our lifetimes, that the air and water in our country is cleaner than it's ever been, and that our emissions continue to decline even as our economy grows and our population expands. The problem, insofar it's like, look, if carbon emissions are a problem, you're complaining about America, you're in the wrong country, And how is it that we're supposed to continue to make sacrifices or find innovative ways to reduce emissions when global emissions are going up, that China is bringing online, 50 coal-fired power plants or whatnot, and all of the emissions from that will wipe out whatever reductions we've made over here. Again, it's just masochistic to try to go down the road of sacrificing and shrinking our economy and lowering our standard of living in pursuit of a goal that, because of other players, is completely unreachable.
And there's – we touched on it a little bit, but like, we can't forget that this inflationary pressure and this drive to shut down our energy industry, or at least freeze it in time so it can't even repair and replace the facilities it has terribly – important national security implications.
Oh, yes.
And it's not just over in Europe. Mm-hmm. It's around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have geopolitical adversaries. That's the reality we live in. We might prefer not to have that, but it's just the reality of living on Earth. There are countries who don't want us to be successful. There are leaders in other countries that want to exploit other people's resources without going through the normal market transactions that would allow you to do that in an orderly and productive way. Mm-hmm. And instead, they just want to take things from other people. And that's part of life. Like, we have to recognize that. We have to be ready for that. And we have always in America had the idea that we need to have strong national defense. We need to be strategically positioned so we can protect ourselves against those sorts of attacks against us that always have come and will come in the future. If we weaken ourselves and continue to strip ourselves of the independence that we can achieve here, we had achieved it just several short years ago, energy independence. If we strip ourselves from that and allow ourselves to be vulnerable to these other international interests that will eat our lunch, so to speak, militarily and economically, we are destroying our future. We're destroying our kids' future.
Correct. We're creating a much more dangerous world, and weakness is provocative. You know, as President Reagan used to say, that the U.S. never got involved in any wars because we were too strong, and that to maintain deterrence, that we need to have not just enough but more than enough capacity to produce tanks and planes and ships and armaments and all the things that are necessary to militarily defend our country. And by, again, trying to suffocate domestic energy production, you're suffocating industry, you're eroding the defense industrial base, and you are, literally inviting other aggressor countries to take a swing at us.
Increasing our vulnerability.
And so this is why, again, we need to strengthen America by maximizing domestic energy production. That not only is it good for our balance of trade, good for our economy, it's good for our national security. And so we're going to keep hammering on that. Hope you guys will come back and be part of the next program and the one after that to hear us talk about these themes. So anyway, we're down to the last of our time here on the program. It's always great to be together. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and Commonwealth Foundation?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org on the web.
All right. Outstanding. Rebecca, where do people go to learn more about you?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And also on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. From Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. In the autumn of 1994, Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor Mark Single was cruising to what appeared to be an easy win over Congressman Tom Ridge to succeed Robert P. Casey Sr. as governor of Pennsylvania. Then Reginald McFadden murdered two people, kidnapped and raped a third, and changed the course of the campaign. Why? In his role as lieutenant governor, Mark Single sat on the Pennsylvania Board of Pardons and Parole. McFadden had been serving life in prison for a previous robbery and homicide and appealed to the board for a pardon. In a 4-1 vote, with Single in the majority, the pardon was granted, and Governor Casey subsequently signed the commutation papers. Within months, McFadden struck again, committing the crimes which exploded as a campaign issue. Single's lead vanished, and Ridge went on to win the election and become governor. Ridge was subsequently reelected and served until resigning in the wake of the September 11, 2001 terror attacks to serve as a Homeland Security advisor to President George W. Bush. As a campaign issue, the power of crime and public safety cannot be overstated. This year, with the riots of 2020 fresh in voters' memory and rampant crime overtaking the nation's cities, including Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, personal safety remains a key voter concern. Pennsylvania's statewide campaigns are primarily focused on other issues. With the nation in a recession, triggered by persistent record-high inflation, high gasoline prices, and rising food prices, the economy is a kitchen table concern for most voters. On the left, the Dobbs abortion decision, and on the right, election integrity, are animating issues for the party bases. Polls show that races for both governor and U.S. senator from Pennsylvania to be close, And with the general election campaigns now in high gear, the gaps are closing. In that competitive environment, crime and public safety could become the determining issue. This is especially true in the U.S. Senate race, where Democrats are vulnerable as the defund the police mantra of the radical left is rightly being blamed for skyrocketing crime rates in the nation's cities. The Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate, current Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, has significant exposure on this issue. Like Single, he sits on the Pennsylvania Board of Pardons and Parole, where he has been an outspoken advocate for the mass release of prisoners. The campaign of Republican nominee Dr. Mehmet Oz has put the spotlight on Fetterman's radical statements in campaign ads. Understanding the pivotal nature of the issue, Fetterman's campaign has responded with ads featuring the candidate saying stopping crime is why he got involved in politics. He cites the fact during his term as mayor of Braddock, several years went by without anyone being murdered with a gun. Fetterman may regret bringing up his record as mayor. A Fox News article on Fetterman's tenure found that during those years, Braddock had, quote, one of the highest crime rates in the state of Pennsylvania. It continued, quote, in 2018, shortly after Fetterman left office, Braddock's per capita murder rate was higher than in some of the most dangerous countries in the world. Honduras and Belize are safer than Braddock, Pennsylvania, end quote. On the crime issue, Fetterman is captive of his past. Dr. Oz, however, will benefit from the generic Republican advantage on this issue, and he has no record upon which he can be attacked other than not having previously served in elective office. This is one of the many reasons why Fetterman is ducking debates. On crime and many other issues, he has staked out positions far outside the political mainstream, and true issue-focused debates would be revealing. But ranging from our nation's many global challenges to the economy to crime, Pennsylvania voters need to hear from the candidates in a significant forum outside of 30-second television ads and snarky tweets. Those ads and tweets have largely avoided any serious discussion on important issues, centering instead on largely irrelevant topics. As for the crime issue, the bottom line is people don't care how many houses someone else owns if they don't feel safe in their own. It is time to focus on what really matters. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRAK-AM in Williamsport, WVMM-FM in Grantham, along with WRRN-FM and WNAE-FM in Warren, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.